where you became a doctor.
Oh,
where
sure.
You're a doctor.
So I did my PhD at Stanford. Took me 6 years. And before then, I was back in England. So.
Cool.
Did you study the same thing? I mean, obviously you studied math.
Right. It was mathematics as well. And yeah, I mean, that's usually the way it goes, is that, you know, you spent 6 years of your life looking into this very small, narrow area, and you think, well, maybe I should use that time that I spent for the same sort of thing, because doing something else would be kind of a bit of a waste. So yeah, it's the same sort of thing.
So you're an expert, obviously. At this point.
Don't quote me on that.
And sometimes you spend seven.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What is it in math that you do?
So I'm involved in a branch of mathematics called topology, specifically three-dimensional geometry and topology. So what this means is it's the study of sort of objects that are three-dimensional. For example, knots. So if you tie a knot in space, so if you just take a piece of string and you tie a knot, and then you want to fuse the ends together, so you just have a continuous curve. And then the kind of question we might ask is, you know, so you've knotted this thing, or you think you have, maybe there's a way to move it around and untie it somehow, and how can you tell if that's possible or if it's not, that sort of thing. And there's lots of pictures involved, which is what I like about it.
Yeah, it's pretty visual stuff, and that's kind of fun. Unfortunately, we have no visual.
Yeah,
to explain.
Doesn't work.
It's a limitation of radio.
Yeah, but maybe we can start with the spiel for people who don't know topology.
Right. So I guess let me say what a manifold is, which is sort of the object that we most usually work with. So it's a space. And if you look at a small part of it, it looks like normal, say, three-dimensional space. But it might be connected together in some strange way around the back. So, for example, maybe if you imagine you're in a room, a square room, a cubicle room, and imagine that if you walk out of the north side of the room, then you come back on the south side, and you walk out the east side, you come back on the west. And if you walk out the top side, or I guess fly out of the top side, you'd come back on the bottom. And so, and if you think about this, you know, what are the places where, you know, all of the places in this space, if you just look at a bit of it, it looks like normal three-dimensional space, but it's connected together in this strange way. So
that reminded me of that movie Cube.
yeah.
A little. Did you ever see that?
I've never seen that. I remember hearing about it and that I wanted to see
right.
it.
Yeah, it was a bunch of cubic rooms and they were all connected in a weird way.
Right.
Much like that.
We don't really tend to go in for all of the horrible traps in mathematics then.
Yeah, no, nobody, or people rarely ever die from doing mathematics. Let's say that.
Rarely.
I don't want to make any absolute statements
right.
as a mathematician. I know that they shouldn't do things like
Sometimes
that.
Sometimes people go crazy. Or at least that's what the movies think.
Right.
Exactly.
So I was at this conference last weekend, and there was a man giving a presentation. I guess it was about Poincaré, and he was saying, oh yeah, so this, you know, this was not solved and people were trying to solve it, and then someone decided to talk about knots for a while and somehow that helped explain it, and I didn't understand how those two things were connected at all.
So we already talked about manifolds, so the Poincaré conjecture, which I think you're talking about, is it was the big problem in the area. Now it's been solved. But there's still plenty of things to do. But one example of a three-dimensional manifold. So, you know, I talked about this room. But you can also think about, going back to this knot, if you think about everything outside of the knot, the whole of a three-dimensional space except the knot,
right?
Then that's another manifold.
So I guess I have a related question, because he said very much the same thing. He, you know, showed this picture of sort of a rusty brown knot on this black background, obviously, you know, generated from a computer program. And he was like, yeah, so, you know, you just imagine the empty space around the knot. And I was, I know other people in the audience were like, I don't understand what you're talking about. How am I supposed to imagine the three-dimensional space
you
around
don't
the knot?
You have to imagine it. You just see it, right? I mean, so, okay, I'm not going to try.
So the audience, he's holding up a twisted
I just picked up a piece of cable, which is the kind of thing they have lying around in radio stations. And, you know, so I'm going to tie it up in some knot and put the things together. And so, you know, everything that isn't the cable,
right?
You know, you can sort of stick your arm through things and say, well,
does that help you understand it? To look at the
drawing pictures really does help. Yes. And sometimes playing about with bits of string really helps as well.
Yeah.
I've done that in the last 2 months or so.
Yeah, I remember when I took graduate, you know, sort of basic topology, and we talked about knots for a little bit, and I kept a little piece of string around, and I would just do things with that. I needed physical, not only visual, but physical aids. And for three-dimensional stuff, it's not that hard to imagine.
Right.
I mean, I've met people who say they imagine five and six dimensions, but they're lying. Yes, they're lying. But three-dimensional stuff, you can definitely sort of...
There's a lot of mathematics, and I mean, even in areas related to my area, which is, you know, five-dimensional, seven-dimensional, n-dimensional, infinite dimensional, and there's no way to see it. It's
It's completely abstract. It's something you can draw a picture of.
Might be useful, but you know, it's not so hands-on. It's not so sort of physical.
Yeah. And maybe do you want to move on to the juggling
stuff? Yeah. Do you want to take a we're almost to the halfway. Should we just go ahead and do our messages and then come back?
Okay, sure. Okay. And
we've got some messages for you, the listener. So if while we're playing the messages you want to call in and ask a question or make a comment, the telephone number is 495-5879-495-KVRX.
At KVRX, we love music and we love Austin. That's why we play local bands. So call in to hear your favorites at 495-KVRX. Local independent music on 91.7 KVRX Austin.
I like music.
Music makes me dance.
I love to dance. Dance, 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 dance.
Tora, tora, tora.
Dance, 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 dance.
To DJ Jenny every Friday at 9 p.m. to find out what artists will be performing at a venue near you.
We tried to do it secretly so no one would see.
And the top 10 reasons to listen to the Hit List Friday nights from 7 to 8 p.m. hosted by Adriana are... Number 10, there's nothing better going on Friday night from 7 to 8 p.m. Number 9, there's nothing else going on Friday nights from 7 to 8 p.m. Number 8, KVRX DJs are the most smartest DJs on radio. Number 7, the top 10 is decided by KVRX DJs. Number 6, you will only hear new music on this show. Number 5, 10 is a multiple of 5. Number 4, counting down is more fun than counting up. Number 3, we came up with 10 reasons why you should listen to this show. Number 2, 10 is also a multiple of 2. And the number one reason you should listen to the Hit List Friday nights from 7 to 8 p.m. is none of the hits and the very best of them.
Okay, so we're back. And so we wanted to talk a little bit more specifically about, I don't know if you're really researching juggling.
No, not really. It's just another thing I do.
Okay.
It's more of a, if you go to Henry's website, which we should put a link of
on our
website, but there's lots of juggling pictures that look pretty amazing. I mean, how many things can you juggle?
It's the insane question. It's always that
one. I'm sorry. Is that asking
it's
you
fine.
Know, how much money you make?
No.
What's the smallest number of things you cannot juggle?
The smallest number of things I cannot juggle, depending on your definition of juggle, is 8.
Okay.
So there are, I mean, people have come up with precise definitions for the Guinness Book of World Records or whatever.
But it depends on maybe like the size of the things.
Oh,
or
I mean,
slipperiness of things.
Right. And if, you know, so there's a big difference between a ball-like object, which has spherical symmetry, and a club-like object, which does not, has line symmetry. So tying in with the mathematics. So if you've got a club, then you need to worry about how many times it spins when you throw it up. Whereas if you have a ball and it doesn't, and they take it more space in the air. So yeah, no, for anybody thinking of getting into juggling, I would say spend a bit of money on your props, because you know, really, you can do things with tennis balls, but it's so much harder.
Yeah.
And if you're learning, it's, yeah.
I tried once with a friend of mine, just gave me some rolled up socks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was awful. It was horrible.
It's possible to do, but it's hard.
So what should you start with?
Beanbags. Yeah. Okay. Beanbags.
That's what's recommended,
yeah.
I've heard.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law worked at Amy's Ice Cream for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And he juggled ice cream.
Oh, what? They do like they do
blobs
flaring?
Of
yeah. Just... Well, no, I mean, he juggled things and he threw ice cream in the air and caught it with the little plate. And
yeah.
They did a bunch of like little performances. I don't know, but I know that was part of his, you know, what made him interesting to Amy's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a similar thing with cocktails and, you know, flaring. I think it's called.
Oh yeah. Oh.
There's this whole raft of, you know, different sort of object manipulation skills that go on. So this past weekend, you just missed it, was the Austin Juggle Fest. And we had, I don't know, 150 to 200 people from all over the country. And we had people from Italy and Germany and things like this. And they all come together and they all take over a gym and juggle and balance things. And I think there was a little bit of flaring as well, which is the sort of cocktail kind of skills and mm-hmm. throwing around shakers and cups and things like that.
And well, the reason we're asking you about this is because there's this outreach program for local middle school and high school kids mm-hmm. called yep. the Saturday Morning Math Group. And it is organized by people in the math department here at UT. And this Saturday, the 23rd?
23rd, yeah.
Yeah. Henry.
That's me.
Dr. Sagerman is going to be talking about the mathematics of juggling. And so can you tell us a little
sure.
bit, give us a preview of what sorts of things you'd be talking about?
It's sort of almost more a question of notation rather than sort of, you know, hardcore mathematics. So the question is, it's sort of similar to choreography. I mean, how do you write down a dance? How do you notate a juggling pattern? And there's a few different people came up with essentially the same idea around 1980. Of an idea of how you can sort of write down what a juggling pattern looks like. And so the idea is that, so if you're juggling along and you've got some number of objects in the air and you're about to throw something, then it's going to come down again, the thing that you're going to throw, at some point in the future. And what you want is for it not to come down at the same time as something else, because this means that you're going to drop those things. it's a combinatorial problem of what sequences of... So the time that something takes in the air is roughly the same thing as how high you're going to throw it. So what are the possible sequences of throws that you can make so that you won't get a collision? And, you know, so that's the basic idea. And there was... this happened around 1980. A few different people came up with the same idea. And it sort of opened up a new... area of juggling that people were with this notation, you could, you know, figure out what was possible, and people were doing things that nobody else had ever done before. Nobody had thought to throw things in those sort of patterns.
Right. So instead of just trying to see what crazy thing you could do with balls, you had an idea of what things were feasible, and then you can
work it out on paper. So I spent 6 years in Stanford, and there's a very good juggling club there. And we would spend roughly half the time talking about what we were going to try and juggle and half the time actually juggling. And sometimes we'd have to get out the paper and pen and try and figure out how this thing was going to work and how you're going to figure out how to, you know, arrange all of the passing throws and the self throws and mm-hmm. make sure that nothing collided. So it's an interesting sort of offshoot of combinatorics.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And have you come up with any new patterns that nobody else has done before?
Well, when I was at Stanford, I was involved in inventing, I guess, some new patterns. None of which got my name attached to them, sadly, but it's okay. Juggling, there's so many, you know, as an art form, particularly... You know, these days there's so many people out there around the world discovering new things, and you know, transferring ideas at conventions, festivals like this. And there are, you know, so many different areas that people are working on. And there's room for creativity.
Right.
People discover new ways of using old props and new ideas of things to do all of the time.
That's great.
So it's really exciting.
So you have to be... Mic is not on again. So I guess, but you have to have a sort of basic level of competence at juggling. I would imagine to work on the forefront of
to an extent. Although, you know, every so often you find somebody who's not had sort of contact with the larger juggling world, mm-hmm. who comes along and is doing this thing that you've never seen before, and that's certainly possible.
Okay.
But you know, you start going and
just practice.
You learn how to do things, and then, I mean, nowadays with YouTube, it's far easier to transfer ideas of things to do.
Right.
You don't actually need this notation so much anymore. Back when we didn't have video online all
you
the time.
You have to write it out.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, you know, you learn a few things, and then there's the sort of basic patterns that everybody knows, and mm-hmm. then, so you learn them, and then you try, you know, you sort of specialize in experiments, and it's just like mathematics.
Yeah.
Or science.
It does sound like that a lot. And yeah. And this Juggle Fest, I mean, I was actually wondering how much it was like, you know, maybe a conference where people show new things that they've come up with, is it more just fun and...
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we're not sitting in an auditorium,
right.
Or but there were workshops, you know, there were accomplished performers, you know, talking about, you know, say, how do you organize an act to set to music, you know, ideas for creative things, or... you know, have a jam for things you can do with four clubs or something, and then people exchange ideas and, you know, try all kinds of things. And lots of it is just social, and lots of it is, there's certain things that you can only do with a whole lot of jugglers in the same place at the same time. So on Sunday we played volley club. It's like volleyball, except you're juggling, and there's this one club that's going back and forth
A net?
Yeah, over a net.
Great.
And you make sure you don't throw it out, and you're not allowed to drop your other clubs either. That's great.
And how much do you think, because I know a lot of people who are into science and math that also like juggling. And so I wonder, how much do you think that, you know, the ability to do math or science is connected to the ability to juggle?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, within juggling, there's certainly, you know, a large sort of geeky kind of contingent, but there's also, you know, performers and hippies and you know, it's quite a broad thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously I'm interested in sort of the mathematical combinatorial stuff. But there's also, I think, something to do with bloody-minded persistence that you kind of need to... spend a lot of time sometimes, but you know, then you make some progress.
Right. So maybe it's the ability to like try something many times and fail at it and then not give up. Like, I think that's like very basic sort of science.
Hmm.
I
agree with you.
I mean, most of us, I mean, all three of us have not accomplished great things right away. And
this
then yet. And no, but I mean, like, immediately as we try to do something, we haven't done it right, but that didn't make us think, oh, we suck at math or we suck at chemistry.
Right.
You know, it was mostly, oh, I don't understand this, I want to.
Yeah, right. I found that much harder to do with other things. Like, I taught geometry for a year, but I crap at pool. Like, I can't. I realize that it's kind of just that I don't care enough to practice at that.
Right.
Whereas, like, I come into work and fail
one of the big
day,
things
okay.
about juggling, which I think is a big draw, is that it has easily achievable goals. Like, you're trying to learn this thing, and you can probably do it in a couple of hours. And then, and especially with juggling, you know when you did it, right?
Yeah.
The balls didn't fall on the floor,
right.
And you did it. And you know, it's this good, great sense of achievement.
Right. I've often wondered about, like, you know, science and arts, because it also seems like a lot of, or a big chunk of scientists also really enjoy some sort of artistic thing. And it feels to me like there's also the draw that, not unlike science, in arts you have a very clear product. When you do something, you can show it to everybody.
Yeah.
Your mom will like it. You know, and it's just there's something about being able to accomplish a task or a goal and then have something to show for it, because in math, it sometimes happens that all you're trying to do is understand something, and then you understand it, and
right.
So where are you then?
But
you know,
would,
like, who can you right. show that you understand it? Other
if,
than
if you have an application, if you can use what
right.
you knew, what you learned, to make something
mm-hmm. or, that other people know yeah. about,
and already. That other people can enjoy, that you can share with anyone, regardless what their background is.
Oh yeah,
it's nice to be able to do something like
if
that.
If you can
too.
Come back with something that anybody will find beautiful, then mm-hmm. no, I absolutely agree.
Yeah. So maybe that's the draw. That's definitely the draw for me. But I don't
uh-huh.
know about
in
other
mathematics?
And no, and just of doing things.
Right.
Like, artistic things. And
juggling is at least about as much about showing off there. Really.
Oh yeah.
When it gets down to it.
I'm not really that much about showing off. Well, I have a radio show, so I'm a little bit.
Yeah,
about
so I was gonna
say.
<as well. laughs>
I like talking
a little bit
on the air a lot. So,
do you want to announce these events?
Oh, yeah.
I have one
to announce
after you and this.
So
one.
We have a couple of events coming up this week. We're trying to do this thing where we tell you, the listeners, what is going on in this upcoming Science Week. And so, first of all, we have the Saturday morning math group.
Oh, yeah.
We have the Saturday morning math group on Saturday.
Do you
want to
give the details?
Oh, yeah. So, and I guess you guys can put a link on the website as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I already did.
Okay, great. It's Saturday, February 23rd, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. in Welch.
Yeah,
Welch,
it's Welch.
1.316.
It's in the basement.
Yeah.
And I hear it has a nice high ceiling, which is good.
Yeah, very high ceiling.
There's going to be demonstrations, I hear, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Good. And this Wednesday, there is going to be a lecture by a Princeton University professor. His name is Christopher Chyba, I think.
Chyba?
C-H-Y-B-A. And he is going to be talking about the possibility of life elsewhere in the universe. And this is a lecture and seminar series called "The Forging the Future of Space Science, the Next 50 Years. And that same day, so that's going to be from 7:30 to 9 p.m. in Welch as well, in room 2.224. So that's on the ground floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be, or before that, there's going to be a panel discussion on the past and future of science and exploration. And several people are going to be here, most notably Steven Weinberg, Nobel Prize winner for physics, and Craig Wheeler, Hans Mark, all professors here at UT, Byron Tapley, Volker Brom, all professors here, and all sort of astronomy or physics professors. So that should be fun. And it's also Engineering Week, so.
Oh, it is.
Happy week, all engineers.
I didn't know that. How did you know that?
I just saw a bunch of posters.
Oh, okay.
On my building.
And then also this Saturday, well, I helped organize this, so this is not, well, whatever, it doesn't matter. there's a career symposium in Welch Hall, which is the chemistry building. And it's all day, but you can go to Saturday morning math group and then come afterwards. It's called Your Career in Chemistry, Thinking Outside the Beaker, and it's about how to find a job if you have a chemistry degree or some other, related natural science degree. And you can sign up online at the Women in Chemistry website, which is, I don't know if I'm supposed to give it or not, that may be a call to action. But I'll put a link on the webpage. And it's basically a whole day affair of panels with people with different types of jobs, academic jobs, industry jobs, government jobs. I'm in charge of the Alternative Careers in Chemistry panel, which includes a textbook editor and some freelance people, some people who do PIO work, they're public information officers for science labs, and a brewer.
Yeah.
A local brewer from Austin. So if you want to go to that, you can check the KVRX website for a link to the registration page. And
cool. Well, thank you, Henry, for being with us tonight.
Thank you
this
for
was
having
very
me on.
Fun. I hope people out there are as excited about math, juggling, and topology as we are. And tune in next week from 8:30 to 9. Actually, next week we're going to have the creators of Flatland, the movie, and they're
cool.
going to be playing some, talking about the making of the movie and the actual topic of the movie, which is very mathy, and
yeah. Definitely.
And we may be playing some audio clips
from it.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks for listening. Now you're listening to KVRX Austin, 91.7 FM and kvrx.org on the internet. If you want to send us a comment or a complaint or a question or praise, the email address for the show is sheblindedmewith@gmail.com, and we have a website at kvrx.org as well.
As I was when I was 6 years old, and oh my God, I feel so old, I don't really feel anything. On the plane, I can see the tiny lights below, and oh my God, they look so alone.